This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. There's a powerful story we've all heard about living in America, that it's the land of opportunity. Everyone can chase the dream, but the latest census figures show the dream's easier to catch if you're white. And that's increasingly true here in Colorado. One area in which minorities are falling behind is education. In this state, whites get college degrees at 3 times the rate of Latinos and 2x the rate of African Americans. As part of our series, Losing Ground, CPR's education reporter Jenny Brundine has this story about one girl who's trying to beat the odds.
Dejanay Bell is a senior in high school. She's African American. She's bright and confident. One of her favorite words to use is
ridiculous.
Dejanay is the kind of kid you'd think would be okay. When she was little, she loved books. Couldn't get enough of them.
I read all day long. That's all I do is read. And that's because my mom, she made me read. That's all she did was make me read. So I love to read.
Things were going well for a while. Dejanay went to preschool, kindergarten. On up through 8th grade, she liked school. The trouble came later.
When I got to ninth grade. Okay, I might cry.
The thing that happened in 9th grade happened to her older brother, Cedric. He died. He was killed, shot.
I didn't want to come to school. I didn't like anybody. I was mean. It was just a lot of things that progressed from there. Like, I hated everybody. I did not want to go to school. I was mean to teachers, you know.
One reason kids start to fall behind in school is something bad happens in life. You can have all the determination in the world, but something derails you. And sometimes kids can bounce back, especially if they have a lot of support. But Dejanay's dad wasn't in the picture, and her mom struggles with mental illness. So at school, it became hard to focus. Homework assignments stayed blank. Eventually, she stopped going to school altogether.
I didn't like the school at all. I felt really out of place. I didn't like it. It was just very distant. I shut down in class. I didn't listen. I felt like I did not belong.
And her grades, as you might imagine, suffered.
I had straight Fs.
The family moved around a couple of times. Once, they didn't have anywhere to live. At one point, in order to keep going to the same school, she had a commute that would make anyone think twice.
Buses to South was ridiculous. I mean, I would take 3 buses every morning in a light rail just to get to school. So it was really hard to wake up 4 o'clock in the morning just to get to school.
The statistics for someone like Dejanay are not great. If you're poor growing up, you're less likely to make it through high school. And if you grow up with a single parent, chances are even slimmer. The numbers in Colorado on this are pretty stark. We're working with iNews Network, who studied census numbers, and they found that here, more than half of black homes and 35% of Latino homes with young children are headed by a single parent. And blacks and Latinos are graduating high school at a lower rate than whites. But statistics are just that. Statistics. Some people beat them.
Oh, I'm doing way better than before. I mean, like, really, really, really better.
It's been a rocky road. One day, Dejanay found herself in a class with a teacher who asked a simple question. How are you doing? Dejanay did better in that class. Instead of an F, she got a D. But there was a glimmer there.
I mean, I didn't pass, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it was better than all my other grades. She really saw the potential in me rather than, I don't know why, something about her class. She just brought that kind of feeling to where I was like, I need to do good in her class.
Today, Dejanay's in a new school in Green Valley. The school's smaller, more intimate, and it's working for her. She's getting mostly A's, but that can only do so much for her GPA with all those F's.
I came here with a point something. I'm leaving here with probably by the end of the year with a 2.0, which is better than anything, but that's not what I want for myself. That's not what I imagined. So my scores are ridiculously low. My GPA is ridiculously low. I can't even get a scholarship. That's how sad it is.
Dejanay is determined to go to college somehow. Maybe study law one day. But she's definitely graduating from high school this summer. She'll be the first in her family ever to do that. Jenny Brundine, Colorado Public Radio News.
And Jenny is here with us now as our series Losing Ground continues. It's about the growing gap between whites and blacks and whites and Latinos. And this gap shows up in income, home ownership. Jenny, we're focused on education now. How big are the gaps in Colorado when it comes to education?
Well, Ryan, they're huge. If you look at scores on state tests, gaps between blacks and whites range from 27 to 36 percentage points, and it's similar for Hispanics. If you look over time, our partners with the iNews Network found, in terms of graduation rates, the gap between blacks and whites has improved since 1960, but it still hovers around 9 percentage points. And between Latinos and whites, it's a staggering 30 percentage points.
That would be for high school graduation. What about gaps for college graduation?
Colorado's gaps are the worst in the nation. The percent of whites with college degrees is three times higher than the Latino rate and double the black rate. And the gaps are growing.
We've been talking about the achievement gap for a long time. Why hasn't the state made more progress in this area?
Not surprisingly, the issue is massively complex, and there are many reasons for why the gap exists. Four or five reasons kept coming up in my reporting, and these are lack of funding, low expectations for minority students, poverty, failure to duplicate programs that are working, and really a lack of a concerted, integrated push to make this a priority at all levels of society. I'll be doing stories on these throughout the course of this year.
Well, let's tackle what a principal told you is one of the biggest reasons for the gap, and that's poverty.
Yes, that was Principal Bob Villarreal. He's principal at a Denver school in which virtually all the children are living in poverty. He also grew up poor.
In my home, we did not have discretionary money for books and magazines. The biggest thrill we received from my mother at the Goodwill in 1960, she found an encyclopedia set from 1949 at Goodwill, and we were voracious readers of those books. In the white family, it's cradle to college. Beginning as a child, if you need pencil, you run at 7 o'clock, 9 o'clock to get that pencil for your son. If they need a poster board for a presentation, the white family's going to Kmart to get it. We didn't have that money.
Low-income children tend to spend less time with books or in conversation with their parents, and that means they've just heard fewer words spoken to them, up to 30 million fewer words than their higher-income peers by the time they enter kindergarten. So that starts the achievement gap right there. Then it compounds over time. Not as much access to preschool or full-day kindergarten. Researchers say teachers at high-poverty schools tend to be younger and less experienced. Classes are big. And sometimes kids with learning disabilities aren't identified. Another reason, summer school in Colorado has virtually disappeared. So wealthier parents pay for enrichment and summer programs and tutoring, while poorer kids slide backwards. Poverty also impacts the amount of time schools can spend on teaching. Here's Henry Ramon, president of the Denver Classroom Teachers Association.
So if a student is sick, where does he go for care school? If a student is hungry, where does he go? He goes to school. Now we have this famous breakfast in the classroom. So at what point do schools now become a larger safety net than just instruction and pedagogy?
He and many others believe the resources aren't there to meet all the demands. Lisa Weil of Great Education Colorado says it's frustrating because there are several things research has shown boosts achievement.
We know that there are things that work. We know that early childhood education works. We know that full day kindergarten works. But those are going to require new resources. We know that individual attention is important. We know that counselors are very important. We've got 400, 500 students to a counselor. We know it works, and for a number of reasons that range from our constitution to political decisions, we are simply not doing that. We have the capacity, and we're not using it.
Which brings us to funding and its role in the achievement gap.
I should be clear, a couple of people I spoke with didn't believe Colorado's low state funding for students plays a role in the achievement gap. They point to a handful of schools in Colorado that have shown good results in this regard. But others say Colorado is really at the bottom of the barrel and more targeted spending could show big improvement. To give you an idea of the plummet, in 1992, Colorado was 24th in overall state spending on public schools. It's now 42nd. And for colleges, only New Hampshire and Vermont spend less per full-time college student than Colorado.
Well, on to another issue that isn't discussed much. One thing we know is that housing patterns create racially segregated schools. How is that feeding into the achievement gap?
The evidence is incontrovertible. In low-income neighborhoods, achievement is lower. Here's former DPS school board member Nate Easley.
There are very few exceptions of segregated schools. Either they're segregated ethnically or segregated socioeconomically or both. In most cases, it's both. That are high performing. There are exceptions, but they're not the rule. By rule, if a school is segregated and it's low income, it's going to be a low performing school.
There's a large body of research that shows integrated schools help minorities achieve, but we've largely returned to a system of segregated schools in most of Colorado's highly urban areas.
Well, we've talked about funding and poverty. You also mentioned that low expectations can be a drag on student performance.
Yes, teachers, just like most everyone else, have their own biases. They make assumptions about whether students who are poor or come from troubled homes can truly learn. In fact, studies have shown that when teachers were told students were likely to do well, even when they weren't, the students did better. Here's Nate Easley again.
I think we tend to focus on kids' deficits. We tend to look at their home situation, or we tend to look at the fact that they're not eating breakfast, and we make excuses for them to fail. And when a system does that, then I think students will live down to the expectation that the system has of them.
His own research for his doctoral dissertation on Mexican immigrants suggests that many felt they were stereotyped and sent to remedial classes. He supports classrooms that focus on the assets of the students. Others, like Pam Martinez of the youth activist group Padres y Jóvenes Unidos, said the same thing.
I think there's a thread running through all high-performing schools with low-income kids of color, and that is people have confidence in and believe in the intellectual capacity of the students in those schools, regardless of class, race, learning a second language, and status, legal status. Regardless of what your zip code is, they absolutely believe in the intellectual capacity of the students. And so the bar is raised and conditions are set for them to catch up, believing that they actually can do that. And they do.
She points to Strive Prep. This is a network of high-performing charter schools that serve a largely low-income minority population with pretty great results. She and others are frustrated that these models aren't being replicated faster in Colorado.
Jenny, some people you talk to believe there's a culture gap that feeds into the achievement gap. Will you explain that for us?
Yes, DPS substitute teacher Aubrey Valencia has thought a lot about this. She's been in almost all the schools in Denver and has really observed a lot. She was also part of a Latino council that advised the Denver School Board. She sees a cultural conflict playing out in classrooms. And she says teachers are often dissuaded from getting too involved in their students' lives when, in fact, the opposite should occur.
Especially students who are coming from homes that are maybe unstable, because there's poverty, or maybe there's drug issues, or maybe there's something with immigration, or any number of things that can disrupt a student's ability to learn. If the teacher doesn't even know any of that is going on, how can they bridge those gaps between life and school?
So Jenny, what's next?
Most everyone I spoke with thinks there needs to be a full frontal assault on the achievement gap, more duplication of what's working, more investment in social service workers and mental health counselors, more support bridging the world of poverty and the world of college. But first, setting state goals for reducing the achievement gap. Right now, Colorado doesn't have those.
Jenny, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Jenny Brundin is CPR's education reporter. Our series, Losing Ground, picks up tomorrow with the disparity between whites and minorities in homeownership. We'd love to know what you think of this series, how it relates to your own experience. So become a part of our public insight network through CPR.org and click on Losing Ground.